that does indicate that it could be more challenging than it would otherwise if the drought was completely eliminated.
Gotcha. I was going to ask you what, you know, personal rituals you do to invoke the rain, but...
I think wherever I show up, it seems to just, like, I'm from Kamloops, and I'm just here for the week, and, like, I come up for the weekend, and we're not calling for rain, and then all of a sudden it's raining, and it's happened so many times where I'm like, I don't know. I think that's just it.
I like to do something rain-sensitive, like start painting something really important outside. You know, you cannot have it rain on this thing. Yeah, do that. Then it will rain.
Exactly.
Yeah, do that all summer, and we can get it to rain. Mm-hmm. Oh, great. Thank you so much for your time. We're speaking to Carly DeRosier of the BC Wildfire Service on CFUR 88.7 FM, The Fir, on the 2026 fire season outlook and the concept of the spring dip. Thank you so much for your time and your insight, Carly. It's much appreciated. Good luck this season. Fingers crossed.
Thank you.
This is Ian Gregg reporting for CFIR Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM. This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiatives Program. Find our news stories online at frequencynews.ca or CFUR.ca.
Welcome back to Speak Up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. Thank you so much to Ian Gregg and CFIR Radio in Prince George for that piece, that interview. We will definitely be playing more news pieces regarding the upcoming wildfire season as that approaches, because unfortunately, it's feeling like an inevitability, and it is something that we want you as our listeners to stay informed on. So, that being said, we're going to be taking a little bit of a music break halfway through this episode. We're about 32 minutes into the hour. This next one is also local, and it is from local band Bloom Effect off of their album Ocelon. Take a listen to Surreal. Once again, you're tuned in to Speak Up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. This is your host for the hour, Danny Nesvedarani. That last track was from the band Bloom Effect. The song was titled Surreal. And one thing I want to reiterate before we get into the next talk piece of the hour is the fact that we have a in-studio phone number that you can contact either through calling or texting, and we'll receive it. We'll be able to respond. So if you text 778-782-2573, that is 778-782-2573, we'll receive it. So if you have any feedback, anything you want to share, please do. Okay, next piece for the hour. We're going to go even more north of BC to Smithers. This is a piece from LJI journalist Pamela Hassan about the challenges that Northern nurses are facing, according to the BC Nurses Union.
This is CICK News. Today on CICK News, I'm speaking with BC Nurses Union President Adrienne Geer from a hotel in Vancouver on Tuesday morning while she waited to hear back from the employer, the Health Employees Association of BC, about meeting to pursue a new collective agreement after a 98.2% in-favor response from nurses in the province said that it was time to negotiate for better benefits for nurses and nurse-to-patient ratios.
My name is Adrienne Geer, and I'm the president of the British Columbia Nurses Union.
So we're speaking today on Wednesday, May 13th. And I'd like to just start with, what does the overwhelming yes vote in yesterday's strike mandate mean for the timeline and form of potential job action across BC?
We haven't taken a strike vote or job action in over 25 years. So all of this is like unprecedented, really. What it means is that we have a very strong mandate from the membership that backs the bargaining committee. And what we went to the membership saying is we need to take the strike vote because it was reached an impasse. So the strike vote, it puts us in a legal position to take job action. However, that is not what we want to do. We want to get a deal at the table.
And as of today, have you received a 72-hour promise to get back to the table?
Once we got the results, we communicated to the labor board and to the employer what the results were and invited them back to the table and said, we're willing to negotiate if you're going to return to the table with basically an adjusted attitude. And so the employer has indicated willingness to meet again, and we will resume talks today.
Adrienne, I wonder, what concessions are you seeking from the Health Employers Association of BC on things like benefits parity with other sector unions and protections against workplace violence?
In terms of our benefits, what the fight is about is the ability to actually negotiate them at the table. There has been strong resistance. We haven't been able to increase or renegotiate sort of our benefit design, despite saying this is something we want to do at the table. Nurses need eyeglasses for example, so that they can see the very tiny writing on the side of medication vials. They need hearing aids so that they can communicate effectively with their patients. We need strong paramedicals, which does include registered massage therapy, so that nurses who are experiencing physical and psychological injury on the job every day to keep them healthy and fit so that they can actually continue to care for patients at the bedside. But what the fight is about is even being able to negotiate them at the bargaining table, because the employer has been resistant so far. The piece that pushed us to impasse was just being told, no, like, we're not going to negotiate this. We're willing to do the work, like, at the table. And so it's about being provided an opportunity to even negotiate was certainly part of the issue why we ended up declaring impasse and walking away from the table. The other thing I wouldn't mind just sort of highlighting is, you know, in terms of our injury rates have gone up by 25% since 2019. Workplace violence, one nurse goes off every 16 hours on a WorkSafe BC claim due to violence. Working conditions have drastically deteriorated throughout the pandemic and continue to this day. The working conditions are just extremely poor. And so we need strong benefits to keep us working.
Absolutely. And I did find a stat as well that says the workplace violence injuries have tripled since 2019 province-wide. How do you kind of figure that taking, you know, job action maybe, but going back to the table will highlight these risks without compromising patient care, especially for nurses in rural and remote communities?
So in terms of, there's one proposal that we actually haven't tabled yet, but it does create accountability for employers around violence prevention. There's another proposal that we're very keen about, and it doesn't specifically extend to rural nurses, unfortunately. It is more of like what we're looking for is a pilot understand AI weapons detection. And so where we're proposing the pilots, they aren't in rural communities. What I can tell you is, though, there is ongoing advocacy. What we want to see is relational security officers in all facilities. For more rural, remote facilities, they don't have any provision of security, and they rely on RCMP response, for an example, which may or may not be effective, depending on, like, there are some rural and remote communities where RCMP are only on call overnight, or that geographically what they cover is so vast that a response time, you know, they're doing their best, but it's certainly not a reasonable response. In rural and remote communities, the risk of violence exists, and there's very little to mitigate and to ensure that nurses are kept safe. But I can tell you that if we escalate to job action, the last thing we want to do is to interrupt or disrupt further patient care. It's already difficult to access care in this province. And I would say it's exponentially challenging in rural and remote. And not that I'm a rural and remote nurse, but I have made a commitment and have gone out of my way to make sure that I'm doing worksite visits, that I am visiting northern communities. Going back to the job action piece, what we would do is we would want to take actions that did not impact patient care. So we could do things like banning non-nursing duties as an example.
What are some of those duties that are non-nursing that, yeah, nurses are fulfilling now?
Yeah, so these tasks are important mm-hmm. to the delivery of patient care. It's just that they don't require a professional nurse to do it. So, for example, like portering patients, cleaning stretchers, for example, like in an emergency, like turning them over for the next patient, that kind of thing. Delivering meal trays, going to the pharmacy to pick up medications, going to the blood bank to pick up blood. All those things all still need to happen. But what's happened over the years is like, oh, we'll just get the nurse to do it. Just get the nurse to do it. When you think about the fact that we are not only in a provincial, national, and international nursing shortage, like why are we using nurses to perform tasks that can be carried out by other people? Like, we can restrict overtime, we can work to rule, which again is ridiculous that we have to be in a legal job action situation where we can say, no, we're only coming to work on time, we're leaving on time, and we're taking our breaks.
How has public response been? And what message do you have for residents facing longer wait times if action escalates?
Well, what I want to say is right now, the provision of patient care in this province is challenging. People are already having issues accessing care. What we're trying to do is we're trying to improve working conditions for nurses, which are ultimately care conditions for patients. And so nurses have been here for patients for the residents of BC throughout the pandemic and beyond. They have shown up each and every day despite unsafe working conditions, not having enough nurses to actually provide the care and holding up the system. And so the last thing we want to do is to further impact patient care. And we will do everything in our power not to do that. And we need the public to support us right now. This isn't something we've done in over 25 years. Mm-hmm. This isn't a path we chose lightly. And I think for the most part, the public does appreciate and support nurses.
Okay, so just a pulse check right now. So we're speaking on Wednesday, May 13th in the morning here. It was announced that there's 72 hours before going back to the bargaining table. So I guess, what do the next couple of days look like for you and for the union?
Well, there's not a requirement to wait for 72 hours to get back to the bargaining table. We are here at the hotel ready to go. So the next, I think, 72 hours will tell us whether or not the employer has returned with an adjusted attitude and a willingness to get a deal. One thing that I would talk about is ratios. And so that's something that we did negotiate in April 2023. And it was a negotiation that took place directly with the Ministry of Health. And what it does is it requires a minimum number of nurses to take care of a group of patients. And so I'll give you an example of on a medical or surgical unit. One nurse should not be responsible for more than four patients. And in the work that we've done, we have been very thoughtful about creating a rural and remote framework, acknowledging that there are fewer wraparound other support staff in rural and remote communities, and that, you know, we need to actually create some additional redundancy in the number of nurses that get assigned to a facility when sometimes there's only like one or two nurses, right? And so the British Columbia Nurses Union is working really hard to try to address some of the inequities that currently exist for patients and for nurses that are experiencing healthcare in the north and in rural and remote regions. You know, part of the reason why we're so steadfast in negotiating an agreement that improves our working conditions and creates safety in the workplace is a collective agreement that is competitive, is because we need to hire many, many more nurses to this province, and particularly in northern communities. We have the commitment. We started to implement. We're seeing really positive signs, including in the rural and remote areas, but we're not going to be able to continue that work if we can't address some of the systemic issues that are, frankly, driving nurses away from the workforce.
As the first province in Canada to establish mandatory standards with a target of one nurse for four patients in medical and surgical units, Northern BC faces unique challenges in meeting these goals. Ongoing monitoring by the BC Nurses Union aims to ensure compliance with these new standards, fostering safer and more equitable working conditions. However, the success of these initiatives hinges on effectively attracting and retaining nursing staff in the North, where the challenges still remain significant. Thank you very much to BC Nurses Union President Adrian Gear for taking the time to speak with me today. CSK News is funded by the Government of Canada, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and is a participating station in the Local Journalism Initiative. On behalf of my colleague Dan Messick and myself, Pam Hassan, thanks for listening.
This is Bird Note. The harsh caws of American crows are one of the most familiar bird calls in North America. But a few crows in this flock sound like they've got stuffy noses. The birds aren't under the weather, of course. They're fish crows, a different species from the more widespread American crow. Fish crows are a little smaller than American crows. Otherwise, they look very similar. But their voices are distinctive. The American crow's hoarse caws. And the nasally calls of the fish crow. While they do love seafood, fish crows aren't limited to coastal areas. They're found in much of the eastern U.S., and the species seems to be spreading to new areas north and west to breed. In winter, fish crows join flocks of American crows looking for food in cities and landfills, where they'll sometimes squabble for a tasty morsel with a fellow scavenger like a raccoon or a gull. So, if you hear a bird in your neighborhood that sounds like it could use some cold medicine, keep an eye out for fish crows. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein. This episode is brought to you by Wild Delight Bird Food, which aims to support wild bird populations with clean, nutritious ingredients in every blend. Available at Chewy.com.
Volunteering at CJSF 90.1 FM is a great experience and is easy to get started. So I'll tell you a little bit about it in the hope that you reach out. As this station is run almost entirely by volunteers, you have a variety of ways to get active at CJSF. Every department can use a little bit of help. Arts and entertainment. Well, you can write and produce reviews, conduct interviews of local musicians, the music library, acquiring, organizing, reviewing, and compiling charts. Public affairs. Interviewing groups, attending events, recording lectures. Public relations, postering, graphic design, and programming. You can host your own show or work on a collective. Production, audio editing, and PSA building. And once you feel comfortable, you can even volunteer to help the volunteers. So volunteer with us at CJSF 90.1. Email us at vol4cjsf@sfu.ca.
Welcome back to Speak Up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. This has been your host for the hour, Danny Nesvedarani. And you heard the PSA. If you would like to volunteer with CJSF, reach out. It's, again, astoundingly easy to get involved here at CJSF. And I think anytime I tell someone just how easy it is always met with some level of surprise. And I think here at CJSF, we are constantly trying to counteract that narrative that being a part of media or media production or just radio in general is something that is difficult to do. And it really is not. You don't need to have any experience. You just need to have a want to do it. And we will help you make that a reality. So yeah, if you would like to host a show, sort through music, or just hang out here at the station, come up. We're up here on Burnaby Mountain at the SFU Student Union Building. Hope to see you soon. Anyways, we're nearing the end of the hour. In about 7 minutes, Democracy Now! Will be playing right at 11 a.m. But before then, let's play a little bit more of local music. This is from a band that I keep playing on Speak Up, and I will keep playing until this is no longer a new album and it is taken off the playlist. But until then, I will keep playing them. This is from the band Whack. And this next track is titled Heart in What City?
Maybe you do what you do from two until two.
Once again, that was Heart in What City by the band Whack, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. And we've reached the end of this episode of Speak Up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. Sincerely, hope you enjoyed that hour of news from all across British Columbia, from the likes of myself, as well as other fellow local journalism initiative journalists throughout BC. Make sure you stay tuned. We have an amazing day of amazing programming here at CJSF. Right after Democracy Now! At 11 a.m., we have Raccoon City with Katie Wilkie, sound and music, fun for the ears. Then afterwards, typically Tuesdays with Leslie. This is going to be an episode where her and Sasha speak on the Vancouver Art Book Fair that happened this past weekend. I attended that as well on one of the days, and I can only imagine there was so much to talk about, so I think that's going to be a great episode. Later in the day, we have Slumber Party at 6 p.m., and then Bitcoover at 8 p.m. with music coordinator Connor. Thank you all so much for tuning in. Democracy Now! Is coming right up.
Host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this